House Labor and Commerce will now come to order. It's 3:22 p.m. on April 8, 2016. With us, we have Representative Ledoux, Representative Colton, Representative Hughes, Representative Culver, and Representative Josephson, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Representative Keto will be joining us in the near future. Today we have two items on the calendar, Senate Bill 121 and Senate Bill 127, and we'll be taking them in that order. So, Edra, I believe you're carrying the bill, aren't you? Welcome back.
Thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record. You've got our undivided attention.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. Today before you have SB 121, which is a consumer protection bill. This is a bill that allows a parent, legal guardian, conservator to place a security freeze on a dependent's credit file. And ultimately, if none exists, presumably because the child or the dependent has not established credit of their own, then the credit bureaus would be directed to establish a credit file for the purpose of placing the freeze on it. As you all know, or as we may all know, identity theft is a growing concern, and local, state, and federal governments are constantly taking measures to try to combat that. And an area of growing concern is child identity theft, which is how this bill started out. We covered just minor children. It underwent a change in Senate Judiciary to include incapacitated adults and other protected individuals. Oftentimes, those individuals have not established any credit in their own name. They may not be able to manage their own finances as an adult, or rent an apartment, which can establish credit. So this allows those who are tasked with managing their finances to place the credit freeze on their credit file.
It looks like the title is almost as big as the bill. I don't think we'll need a sectional, and the fiscal note's zero. Who's got the first question? Gabrielle, Representative Ledoux. Well, this is getting way too easy. With that, we'll open up public testimony. And Laura Hughes, are you with us? Or online? Off net. Laura Hughes?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you for joining us. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Laura Hughes, and just representing myself in support of this bill.
Well, thank you very much.
I guess just to kind of echo a lot of what Edra talked about, she's done a great job introducing the bill. I contacted Senator Meyer's office, I think it was last May, just out of researching a little bit about credit freeze, as my husband and I had done a credit freeze, and we were looking to do the same for our daughters, but found that Alaska didn't have a law set up that allowed us to do that yet. So that's when I contacted Senator Meyer, and long story short, I'm excited to see how far this bill has come, and I hope to see it finally passed here soon.
Any questions for Ms. Hughes? Seeing none, thank you again for joining us today. Representative Ledoux.
Actually, I've got a question for the bill sponsor.
Certainly.
So can adults who are not incapacitated get freezes on their credit files?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes, they can. There is currently in statute the Personal Information Protection Act, and that establishes the procedures for individuals to be able to contact credit bureaus and place a freeze on their own credit file.
Paula?
And so what exactly does a freeze on your credit file mean?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, a freeze means that the credit bureau cannot share your credit score or your credit history with another company who is inquiring for the purposes of establishing credit with that third company, with the inquiring company.
Then how would you ever get, if you put a freeze on it, would you only do that if you thought that somebody was trying to steal your identity? Because how would you ever get credit? And this doesn't actually go to necessarily to a freeze on children, but it just goes to everybody.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the purpose of a freeze would be so that if you had a fear that someone had access to your social security number or account numbers or other personal information, you could place a freeze just for the purpose of knowing that your credit file is secure and it can't be shared with other companies, which is the what they would need in order to establish the credit. And there are also provisions in the Personal Information Protection Act that allow for you to unfreeze it either temporarily or permanently.
So just one more follow-up. So under this bill, if the parent froze it or the guardian froze it, would it be able to then unfreeze it?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes. The parent could unfreeze it, or the child. So, for instance, in this state, individuals can apply for financial aid at the age of 16. So they could, as the consumer at that age, unfreeze their credit.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson. Nope. No questions?
You always assume I have.
And I'm just assuming on your last answer, thank you, Mr. Chair, that if a minor's credit were frozen by the parents and after they turned 18, the parents froze it, the child, well, no longer a child, an adult then could do the unfreezing.
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to acknowledge that we've been joined by Senator Meyer, the sponsor of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome back.
My apologies for being late.
Representative Hughes.
And I have a new question. I'm just curious. I know because of iTunes and technology and things like that, young people are doing a lot more purchasing than they used to. And is that why this is now needed, that maybe it wasn't needed 10, 15 years ago, would you say?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, it's needed because a couple things. One is, in my research, I've found that there's very little data being kept. It's sort of, people are just now sort of discovering this increasing identity theft as far as children are concerned, so much so that the data hasn't even kept up. But what they do know is that the national rate is about 11% of children have had their social security numbers used without their consent or knowledge or the parents' knowledge. Children are about 35 times more likely than adults to have their identity stolen because it's basically a blank slate. So there are many states. There's about, I believe it's 16 and maybe 20 now, depending on how far they've come in their legislation, who are moving towards allowing this credit freeze by parents. And I think people are just beginning to recognize what a big problem it really is.
Mm-hmm. Just a comment, Bob. I'm thinking, you know, I'm not real young, and so when my children were young, they didn't have their own cards. They were not going on. They would do it through mom and dad. So I would say that definitely in this day and age, it's different, and the kids do have, there could be identity theft as a minor. So thanks for bringing this forward.
And I'd like to add that we have Gavin Williams from the Department of Law for questions as well. Any questions for law? Any questions for the sponsor?
Sounds like she's done a great job. I should probably just leave on ahead.
It sounds like, and again, it's a pretty short bill. Anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Anybody else online that would care to testify? Seeing none and hearing none, we will close out public testimony. No questions? It's way too easy. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move SB 121 version 29-LS1129/E with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill will move out of committee, and we will take a quick recess. Last bill on the calendar today is Senate Bill 127. Lauren Rasmussen, are you carrying the bill?
We're trying to teach.
I believe it's your first time before the committee. Welcome, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you. For the record, Lauren Rasmussen, staff to Senator Huggins. He sends his apologies. Not able to make it today. I will do an overview of the bill and can go through the sectional if the committee would like. Mr. Chairman, when Alaskan consumers apply for a new auto or homeowners insurance policy, companies take several variables into consideration to assess risk. A few examples are your motor vehicle record, good student discount, age, marital status, and credit history. Under current law, credit history is included in underwriting new policies but must be removed at the time of policy renewal, which happens every 2 years about. It should be noted that currently consumers can elect to include their credit history at the time of renewal, but as you'll hear in later testimony, this can be an extremely time-consuming process and ultimately confusing to the consumers. The process of removing credit history often results in consumers seeing an increase in their rates and further leads to churning, which to market disruption known as churning, where consumers leave one company for another looking for lower rates, which means they would not have benefits of long-term policyholders. Senate Bill 127 will also require insurers to make exceptions to a consumer's rate when the consumer's credit is adversely affected by extraordinary life circumstances. This applies to both new and existing policies and is a safeguard for consumers. A few examples of extraordinary life circumstances, which you'll find in Section 3 of this bill, are serious illness or injury to the consumer or an immediate family member, military deployment overseas, divorce, and involuntary unemployment. Mr. Chairman, this bill is simply fixing a discrepancy in the law. Alaska is the only state to require insurers to remove credit history when rewriting a policy. This bill also has no fiscal impact on the state of Alaska with a zero fiscal note. We have several industry experts in the room and online to testify and answer any questions that you may have today. Thank you.
With that, I think Representative Ledoux.
You mentioned churning, and that is people looking for going to other companies and looking for cheaper prices.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's through the chair. That's correct.
What's wrong with that? That sounds like a good idea.
I might have to defer to other testifiers in our lineup.
Okay. I'd like to hear the answer to what is wrong with somebody trying to get it going to another company to try to get a cheaper price. That just sounds like the all-American idea of competition.
I think that through the chair, the Division of Insurance might be able to answer that question.
Thank you.
Better.
And actually, we've had a number of several people on the committee have questions that would best be answered by Lori Wanghire, who will be back in town this weekend. And so it's my intention to get as far along as we can and then hold the bill over to next week. But I believe Lori gets back in sometime on Sunday. So I've got a feeling that we'll be able to at least get some dialogue started at that point in time, and then we'll do all of it in committee. But she'll be back in for the beginning of next week, so it's not my intention to move the bill today. Who's next? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Ms. Rasmussen. The removal of credit history after a period of the policy period, 2 years or whatever that is, Do you know why that was put into statute in the first place?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't know exactly why it was written that way. I know this was back about probably over 10 years ago that this was introduced, the actual statute. I can get back to you on that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it was about 14 years ago, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I was involved with it. That's why I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Hughes.
Yeah, back to the churning. Could it be that because after the two-year period, the person can get a cheaper rate because that other company can check the credit score, and if they were to stay and the credit score could be checked, that current company could offer something competitive? I mean, I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to help the marketplace here. Am I correct in that assumption?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Hughes.
Thank you.
Any further questions? With that, let's see. Let me get this thing working. I think we'll open up public test. Okay, Representative Hughes.
I did think of another one. Other states, what's happening in other states? Is this pretty much across the U.S. now that this is done?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, it is my understanding that Alaska is the only state to not allow credit scoring at the time of policy renewal. So this would simply get us in line with the rest of the country.
And I do have another question. They're just popping into my head, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
I have a schedule.
As far as consumers in Alaska, would more consumers end up saving money because of this or having to pay more overall? I mean, I know we have different consumers will be at different points, but in general, do you think it'll be a good thing for consumers? I'm guessing that's why the sponsor brought it forward, but has there been any analysis to see if there would be savings to consumers overall?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, we believe that it would benefit the majority of consumers. I don't know that there is any hard data that would say yes or no, simply regarding Alaska, but looking at other states and how it has affected consumers around the country, it definitely does help the majority of insurance consumers.
Okay, thank you.
I think we'll probably be able to get somebody from one of the insurance companies to give us a handle, but I believe last time we took a hard look at it, I think it benefited 80 or 85% of the population got lower rates, and the 15 or 20 had their rates go up. But that's off the top of my head, and I'm sure those numbers are old, but somebody will be able to bring us up to speed on what it is now. But what they can't do is tell you why it works, mm-hmm. unless they've changed their position on that because it's proprietary. And why don't we start with Christy Babcock? A real familiar face to a number of us from when she was at boards and commissions and various other capacities in this building. But welcome back, Christy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Christy Babcock. I'm an independent contractor, State Farm agent in Kenai. I employ 8 individuals and market insurance and financial services to fellow Alaskans. Thank you for hearing SB 127. I'd like to focus my testimony on the impact of the current law on customers and how SB 127 offers a solution to the difficult situation our customers are now facing. My customers see the impact of the current law every day. I dedicate one full staff member to deal exclusively with the difficulty this law creates for the customer. Customers first hear about this law when we call them and we let them know the rate they received 2 years prior is going to change. We let them know it's not because of anything they've done, their driving, any accidents, But it's because certain characteristics that were used in the original rate have to be stripped out. You can imagine this is not an easy conversation to have. And we explain the rates changing significantly because we can no longer use all those characteristics. It's not a simple conversation. It's not easy for them to understand. We explain there's an option for them to give us their permission and use their credit on renewal. So we can hopefully avoid the 30 to 35% increase. If we can be successful in reaching the client, explaining the situation, getting the form to them, getting the form back from them, getting it submitted, and doing all of this in time to avoid the large rate increase, then the consumer is relieved of the rate increase. But besides being confusing and frustrating to consumers, there's other problems as well. It is hard to reach people. They're busy. Perhaps they're working on the slope. They're busy working. They're on vacation. And if we do miss getting the re-rate done, under current law, they end up paying more than they should because of Alaska statute. Despite how confusing and burdensome the process is for the customer, we work hard every day to overcome the volatile rate increase the situation creates. But sometimes we just can't reach the customer. And in those cases, their rate goes up, they realize it too late, and we're not able to help them. And that's really hard for them to understand. We let them know it's state law that's creating their rate to go up, making their rate go up. And they're really frustrated about that. What I hear from customers is this: can't you please just offer me the rate I deserve? When I shopped for insurance a couple years ago, I shopped all these companies, and I liked the rate you gave me. I was happy with it. That's why I chose you. So why do I have to sign these other forms, and then I have to do it again the next year and the next year? We have customers we wrote in 2009. Maybe they have four autos each. So we call them in 2011 at the first year of renewal on each policy, in 2012 on each policy, 2013 on each policy, 2014 on each policy. That's just one customer. These folks are saying, what is going on? Who do I have to call to make this change? They're really frustrated. I have a young woman in her 20s, right out of college. She worked hard to have good credit. She missed getting the form back to us. Fortunately, she doesn't blame us, but she is now paying more, and she wants to stay with us. She likes having a local agent. Now, I would like to, if I could, answer the representative's question about churning through the chair, if that's okay.
Sure.
You're right. Competition is a great thing, and I think all these industry groups in this room, all these companies, we believe in competition. I love competition. It makes us better. It makes us have good rates. It makes us keep our expenses down. But what's happening right now is there's a provision in state law that doesn't allow us to compete. It says you can compete on new business, but when that policy renews, you have to take out those characteristics, send them a higher bill, but then you can call them and explain why you sent them a higher bill. And if you can explain it to them and they understand and they come in and get the form back, you can give them a lower bill again. But customers, maybe we won't reach them. Maybe they just start shopping. And if they start shopping and go to Company B down the street, they are going to get a lower rate because all of those characteristics can be used. So how does that benefit them? Maybe it is a lower rate then, but maybe they wanted to have a long-term relationship and they wanted all those characteristics to be used, but they missed the deadline, they were out of town, they couldn't be reached. So that churning is not a positive impact on the economy or on our customers. Another customer is, this was a homeowner's. They wanted to know, why did their rate increase from $1,300 to $1,700? New claims, nothing different. And it was because of the credit being stripped out of their homeowner's policy on renewal. And we don't have a program to re-rate those. And so their rate went up. They're hoping the law changes. They'd like to stay with us. And that's why their rate went up. As a practical matter, really briefly, this is what we do. I have this team member. His entire job is to check the list every morning. If he sees a large rate increase and there's nothing else that's been happening with that driver, we know it's because of this. He calls, plays phone tag, emails, makes about 30 to 40 phone calls a day. He explains the situation, difficult call. They're frustrated that their policy is increasing. He explains why. He explains if they sign this waiver, we can usually get it to go back down. We're successful about 98% of the time. But again, our customers ask, why do we have to go through this labor-intensive process, be tracked down?
Representative Ledoux.
So, does anything require you to look at their credit ratings? I mean, in other words, if you don't get their new credit score, does our insurance people require you to give the higher credit, to require that the premium be higher, or do you just take a risk?
And I'm going to defer that question, if I could, to some another expert that's in the room to ask that question about why State Farm and other companies maybe do some of the things they do in their rating, because that's really not my expertise. My expertise is how it affects my customers. That's okay.
So we'll be going through everybody in the room on this.
Okay. In conclusion, I don't see any public policy purpose that's served by the current system. I've been asked by some, what would the impact of SB 127 be on the public? To me, the answer is this. It would alleviate the dramatic swings in rates that our customers now face. That seems a little bit like bait and switch to them. Secondly, it would eliminate the frustration and very cumbersome process of getting a manual waiver signed at each renewal by automating the renewal process. And finally, SB 127 would allow consumers to shop with confidence, knowing there's stability in the rating factors between the factors that go into a policy at initial rating and the factors that go into the policy at renewal. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Representative Josephson, followed by Representative.
Nope. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Ms. Babcock. I asked earlier what the credit history purpose was, the legislative purpose behind a two-year period, and I'm wondering if you know that, mm-hmm. if it could be that it was designed to give a two-year period for someone to improve their history in some way, so they'd be revisited 2 years hence, or...
And my understanding of the couple of reasons that this happened, I believe it was in 03 when the legislature took up clarifying whether credit should continue to be able to be used in insurance rating for personal, home, and auto. One, I believe it was a compromise. We'll have it be used. 47 other states are having it be used. But in Alaska, let's do it a little differently. Let's only have it be used on new business. Let's take it out at renewal. That was maybe a good compromise. I think the other idea was that after 2 years, maybe the internal data that insurance company would have would be, and let's see if it works to take it out at renewal. Maybe the internal data that company has to rate that policy might be able to overcome the impact of stripping out the credit at renewal. Maybe you'd have enough other data to rate it properly, okay. But unfortunately that hasn't worked and we're seeing these rates pop up at renewal.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess it seems like if you're telling me that the compromise a few years ago was maybe the insurance companies would have internal data that they could rate it with, it sounds to me like there's actually nothing, and maybe I need to wait until Ms. Wingheyer is here, actually requiring you to look at this stuff.
And I'd be happy to let Ms. Wingheyer, one of our other experts, answer that. That's okay.
Any further questions? Representative Hughes.
It seems to me like the consumer, after 2 years, is faced with an unlevel playing field, apple and orange, mm-hmm. because if they shop around and their credit score is going to be used, they can be offered a lower rate, and then they have to hassle with going and signing up.
Right.
So, to me, this is somewhat of a no-brainer, and I guess it's more of a comment than a question. But I do have a question. That's happening every 2 years with your customers. And did you say that the average jump up is like 30-35%? Is that, that's really a lot.
Through the chair, for our company, the first 2 year renewal, that's when the credit's stripped out. And then the policy renews every year after that. So what happens is it gets stripped out. And we're seeing 30-40-50% increases. Some maybe 20%. Those are the changes. It's a significant change because they're going from having credit characteristics in there to being totally stripped out. So it makes a dramatic. It's like taking out your good driving record. So then you get the neutral rate instead. So you're charged the same as everybody else.
And so are you losing most of your customers after 2 years then? Is that what's happening? If the rates go up 30, 40, 50%, I would imagine.
So Representative Hughes, through the chair, fortunately, there is a provision in state law that allows us to get a manual waiver, and that allows us to get their signature.
Right.
So State Farm has followed that law, and we have a waiver where we're allowed to go out to them and ask for their signature. And I mentioned earlier that I employ one employee, and that's all he does all day long is contact people about this situation, explains it to them, gets the waiver to them so that they can return it. And then we almost always get their rate back down. There are many companies that don't have that in place just because of the manpower involved. And so that instability that creates and the churning that creates, I fortunately don't lose a lot of money unless they're just so mad because they think we're trying to, they don't understand how this could possibly be. And so they're just like, oh, I'll just shop around. And so they're frustrated and they don't understand. And they would like, that's why they came to us, was because they liked our rate. But we can't offer that same rate unless we get the manual form signed.
Okay. Representative Kito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think one of the questions I have is when you go through now, or if this bill passes, when you go through the reanalysis, would you be using the original credit information, or would you be looking at their current credit score as the renewal comes up?
Sure. Representative Kito, through the chair, it would look at a current picture of their credit situation.
Thanks.
No. Representative Ledoux?
No, I don't have any more questions for Christy, but thank you.
You're welcome.
Any further questions for Ms. Babcock? Thanks again, Christy.
Thank you.
You going to be around?
Yes.
Okay. Thought so. Next up, how about Cindy Smith?
Cindy Smith on behalf of GEICO. I believe this bill is good for consumers. GEICO does not use credit because of the unfairness that is created when a customer's rate would go up by the percentage that Ms. Babcock mentioned. Our management simply doesn't think that that's fair when there's been no change in the accident or traffic conviction history, and so we refrain from giving the lowest rate that we could at initial business so that the rate stays lower, and that's not exactly fair to consumers either.
So I represent a community. Well, I represent a district in Anchorage, but in my area, there are a lot of lower-income people who probably don't have sterling credit ratings. Isn't it better for them if you don't use credit scores at all? And thus, why would this bill be good for my constituents?
Well, credit helps the vast majority of people. And so,
does it help the lower income people though?
Income is not a factor in a person's credit rating. It's the quality of the credit. So if your lower income constituents have cared for their credit, it will benefit them. This bill will benefit them.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're lower income and lower income people tend to lose their jobs more and, you know, be a little bit more transient, it would seem like you compare lower income to higher income people, that lower income people, I would think, would have lower credit scores.
This bill has an extraordinary life change provision in it, so that certain circumstances would not be considered and those people would be given a neutral rating.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, they'd be given a neutral rating if they experienced one of the life conditions you describe, but not if they had bad credit.
I believe that's correct.
Okay.
Representative Duke.
So it sounds to me, though, from what I'm hearing you're saying, that GEICO doesn't even use the credit scores, that you're not required to use, nobody's required to use credit scores.
Insurance companies are not required to use them.
So, for example, if a company that was using the credit score, and then they had somebody who had had a perfect driving record for all of that time, they don't have to actually raise their rates. They choose to raise their rates if they can't look at their credit score again. Would that be correct?
Well, I believe there's an actuary on the line who would be better qualified to answer that question, but you're right. Insurance companies are not required to use it, but insurance companies want to give the right rate to each person, and so the factors that they use to rate each person are based on how likely that person is, how the characteristics indicate how likely they are to have a loss.
And that would seem to me to make actually sense when somebody is originally buying a policy that doesn't have, you know, it's the first time around, and maybe it's a new driver and you don't have any idea about this person. Now you've actually had this person as a client for a couple of years. And the person's had, number one, a good driving record and has actually paid his or her premiums on time. At that point, why do you need to look at the credit score?
Because credit helps the vast majority of consumers.
Thank you.
Representative Hughes.
First of all, I'm going to say I'm very uncomfortable with an implication that low-income people tend to have bad credit more than people that are not low-income. I used to be low-income. I represent people that are low-income, and you know, a lot of those people are working hard and working to keep good credit, so this would benefit them, and right now they're faced with their rates going up.
That's right.
And if they're transient, the ability of the company to track them down, would you not think might be more difficult in order to get them to sign the form? I know GEICO doesn't do that, but I just see this as a benefit, and that was a comment. Now my question, which is a separate from my comment, is you don't use credit in Alaska. Do you use it in other states? Because most states have fixed their statutes like this bill is attempting to do?
Yes, we do. The management feels that it's the unfairness of the very high rate on renewal that's not fair to the consumer, and we simply don't want to put the consumer in that position. We don't think it's fair.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions for Cindy? Cindy, who was the actuary that was online?
I believe that it's a State Farm actuary.
Okay, well, that gives me a clue.
Who's that?
Jeff Kinsey, maybe?
Yes.
Thank you much.
Jeff, are you with us? Thanks, Kinsey.
Yes, I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'll start throwing questions at you as soon as you get done with your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Kinsey, and I'm an actuary with State Farm Insurance. I want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss Senate Bill 127. State Farm is the largest insurer of personal autos and homes in the U.S. and in Alaska, where we insure about 1 in 4 autos and 1 in 3 homes. I know your time is valuable, and I know there are questions to be asked, so I'll keep my statements brief. For many reasons already articulated, State Farm supports the passage of Senate Bill 127, and at this time I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you may have.
Well, I've got the first one. Roughly percentage-wise, how many people receive a lower rate by the use of credit scoring? As opposed to having their
farm specifically, approximately 60% of our policyholders for both personal auto and homeowners that enter their third year of coverage receive a rate increase, all else held equal in their rating plan, when their credit information is stripped out at renewal.
Well, I think we've heard the word significant difference when you use it. Is that just the first year then, or when credit scoring is weighed in?
If we look at the policies that we wrote in 2015 as new business for both auto and homeowners, we are estimating that some consumers, and a large number, in the 3,500 policyholder range, could see a rate increase in excess of 50%.
Okay, I think I'm probably not making myself clear. Credit scoring, we've heard all the way along, has a real value. Christy, how should I phrase this question? Would you join us again? I think you know the direction I'm going in. Or trying to go on.
To the chair, and Jeff, I think what the representative is asking, and I'll try to answer it, Jeff, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me. What Jeff explained was that when the policies hit the renewal, 60%, because the credit stripped out, 60% have the rate increase. And so, Jeff, there's probably a certain percent where their rate might stay the same, right? And then maybe there's some whose rate goes down when the credit's taken out. So would it be fair to say that 80% of the people either benefit or it doesn't have an impact based on their credit? I think that's what the representative wants to know, is how many people...
Well, how about if we exclude Alaska and do it on your overall book where you don't have this influence?
Yeah, Alaska is fairly consistent with the rest of the country, where about 60% of our policyholders benefit by the use of credit, and 40% are either not affected or see a higher premium considering the use of credit. Alaska is very consistent with what we see across the rest of the nation.
Representative Ledoux.
So would you say that lower income people may be more adversely affected by looking at their credit than higher income people?
No, I do not agree with that. In fact, there have been multiple studies, one in particular by the FTC in 2007, another by the Texas Department of Insurance in 2005, that concluded that there is no relationship with income and credit. So I do not agree with the fact or the statement that lower income policyholders would be affected by this bill.
Thank you. That's interesting.
Any further questions for Mr. Kinsey? Thanks again, Jeff. Gary Stranigan. Gary, are you with us?
Mr. Chair, sorry, I was muted. Gary Stranigan with Liberty Mutual Insurance and Tickle Insurance Companies. Thank you for hearing the bill. I just wanted to make myself available for questions, if there are any others from the company side. It seems as though the actuary did a nice job succinctly answering this question.
I guess the only one I have is, are you currently using credit scoring in Alaska, or are you waiting for this bill?
We are using it, similar in methodology to the way State Farm described its operation.
Any further questions for Safeco? Thanks again, Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Timothy Maudsley, Alaska, USA.
Person?
Oh, we can hear you now. Please say your name and affiliation for the record.
Yeah, thank you. This is Timothy Maudsley, president of Alaska USA Insurance Brokers in Anchorage. We wanted to thank you for your time today. Alaska USA Insurance Brokers provides credit union members and others with property casualty and other types of insurance. It is a wholly owned subsidiary of Alaska USA Federal Credit Union and is the largest independent insurance agency in the state of Alaska. The purpose of our testimony is to let the committee know that Alaska USA Insurance Brokers fully supports the passage of Senate Bill 127. Senate Bill 127 will remove the requirement for insurers to eliminate the credit-based insurance score from the rating process after 2 years, as we have heard. This change will provide consumers with a fair and accurate rate on insurance renewals and eliminate confusion due to the policy cancellations and the burden of changing carriers to maintain preferred insurance rate discounts. It is of our opinion that by fixing the current statute, it will open the Alaska insurance market to additional insurance companies, which will increase competition and greatly benefit insurers. We strongly support Senate Bill 127 and urge the House Labor and Commerce Committee to pass it. Thank you.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us. Let's see. Ramon Feliciano in the room. Come on up. Thank you for joining us today, and please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Armand Feliciano with the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. It's a national trade organization. We represent insurers here in Alaska. For reasons already stated, we do support SB 127. We believe it will fix the market disruption, and we believe it's a well-balanced bill and that there are safeguard provisions in it. But through the chair, if I may, I'd like to give a national perspective on some of the questions that have been raised and answer those.
Perfect.
So from a national perspective, about 28 states have a similar law as Alaska, with the exception of the stripping of the credit after 2 years. And other states have some variation of the national model. And there may be one or two states that disallow credit, California and Hawaii, probably the two ones that disallow for credit. But to answer the question, does credit help premiums, or does it increase it or decrease it? The hard data we found, at least online, is that the state of Arkansas, who has a similar credit scoring as Alaska, with the exception of 2 years, is that it does show from 2005, and this is online, about 40% out of 3.1 million policyholders get the benefit of a lower premium because of credit, and another about 14% get a higher premium because of credit. And then about another 42%, 45%, depending on what year you look at, is unaffected by credit. So, I mean, I have a copy here of what we presented to the committee. If I could pass it around if you'd like, but that's
certainly.
Sort of
that's what give it to Conrad. It'll make it part of the permanent record, too, and it'll be posted.
So, with that, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm prepared to answer any questions.
No, thanks. Seeing none, you got off light.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks again. We do have two people from the Division of Insurance for questions, and I'm saving them for last because now we know the questions to ask, I think. And Michael Ricker, in fact, why don't you come up too, Chip, please. And thanks again, gentlemen, for joining us today, and read yourself onto the record.
For the record, my name is Chip Wagoner with the Alaska Division of Insurance. I'm a regulation specialist. And our expert in this matter is Mike Ricker. He is our actuary for property and casualty insurance matters.
Who's got the first question for Mike? Gabrielle, or Representative Liddell.
Okay, so I'm just trying. It seems like there's been a little bit of what I think is conflict in the testimony. I mean, do insurance companies have to rely on this credit if they, I mean, if they choose to? So somebody comes up for renewal, and they don't have the new credit information. Is it just their internal policies that are making them raise the premium, or is there something with the insurance laws that say they have to raise the premium?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, an insurer does not have to look at credit, but insurers are required to file all of their rates and rules with the division, and once they file those rules with us and they are approved, they have to adhere to those. So when insurers file their rules with us, they have, you know, that at new business they can use the credit as a variable, and then their rules have to strip that out at renewal. So they have to have one set of rules, one set of rates and rules that apply to anyone who doesn't sign the waiver, and they have to have one set of rates and rules that apply to those who do sign the waiver. But then when the policyholder either signs or doesn't sign that waiver, they have to adhere to that set of rates and rules, one that doesn't include credit and one that does include credit.
So just follow. So they could easily say, if I understand correctly, that they're going to use the credit score with respect to their initial policy, and then that they are no longer going to use the credit score as far as renewal is concerned. There's nothing that's making them raise the premium as long as they file with the insurance commission.
Through the chair, you're right. An insurer, we do have some insurers who don't deal with the waiver process, and so at renewal they simply take credit out for everyone. They don't solicit the waiver, but the issue isn't that they're raising rates, or that they're choosing to raise rates at renewal. It's that the consumers with the good credit are getting a reduced premium at new business. They're getting a discount, and then, but once you take credit out, and you it's like you can't give that discount anymore. You can't look at the credit to know this person is a better risk than someone else. So you have to give a neutral rate, which for those people who did have the good credit that was used at new business, then at renewal, it looks like an increase in premium because they're going back to a more average rate.
Representative Kudo.
Thank you.
Followed by Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So actuarial question, I guess. So they were talking, the person prior was talking about the 14% that might see their rates go up. Are there things that individuals can do relatively simply to increase their credit score? And I know it's probably different for every company, but are there general things they can do that will fairly rapidly? So maybe they have a lower score and then they need to try and get it up to decrease their rates. In general, are there fairly simple things they can do to increase their credit rating? It seems like there's a small number of people, so if we can find tools for them to make their circumstance better, we'd be better off as well.
Through the chair, Representative Kudo, it is different for every company, and part of the 2003 bill that isn't in this statute, but maybe I should point out when insurers use credit history, it is not a FICO score. They don't say, well, if you have a 700 FICO score, you get this premium. If you have a 600 FICO score, you get this premium. They take individual risk credit characteristics and then build their own models. So an insurance credit score is not your FICO credit score. They're different things. And so based on whatever the insurer, whatever risk characteristics they decide or they find to be predictive, they may use 3 or 4 different risk characteristics. They may use 20, and so I can't say that there's any, you know, common risk characteristics that someone could, you know, improve to get their rates to improve. But the other thing I was going to say is that as part of the 2003 bill, the credit scoring models that are considered confidential. Most rate filings that come in are public access after they're approved and become effective. But the component where companies support and show their credit-based rating are confidential. So it is something that consumers can't easily look at and see, well, it's because of this and because of this and because of this that I could, if I did this, you know, improve this by this much, my rate would change by this much. If I improve this, you know, so they don't know that exactly. There is a another provision within the same statute, 2136.460, that dealing with adverse actions, where right now it's written where if an insured if a policyholder gets any rate other than the very best rate, then it's considered an adverse action, and so the insurer is required to put like the three or four most significant credit attributes that contributed to that. So at least the insured knows, you know, well, it's because of these certain things, that if I could improve one of those things, but I don't know exactly how specific those are, and it doesn't really give the weight for someone to know, well, if I went through the process of making this better, my rate would decrease by 10% or 1%, or so it's... That was a long answer to say I don't know.
Thank you, and I think you're getting close to the question I had, and so it sounds like you said that they are informed of at least the top characteristics that might have impacted their rates?
Yeah, through the chair, yeah. If they don't receive the best rate, I think they're required to disclose the top three or four. Here, the current law here says an insurer that takes adverse action based in whole or in part on credit history or insurance score shall provide the consumer the opportunity. The notice must clearly state the significant factors of the credit history or insurance score that resulted in the adverse action in a manner that allows the consumer to identify the basis for the adverse action.
So that actually answers my question.
So and they do have okay, that. And the statute there is 2136.460, subpart B.
Representative Josephson, followed by Representative Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, through the chair, they could. You said that there'd really be no way to know really the reason for a negative credit score, and so I was left with the impression that there's no way to improve the credit score because you don't know the merits or demerits of how you achieved one. But under this adverse action, an insured could say, oh, effectively, I can't do that again because that was a cause to lower my score. So I'm sort of going the other direction now, that in fact a consumer could sort of figure it out.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Josephson. Yeah, they could figure out. They can't figure out maybe all of the risk characteristics that went into that, and they can't figure out the degree to which they may improve or not. But yeah, they are required to under the current law to be notified of the significant factors that would have increased their rate.
Okay. I asked earlier through the chair about this 2003 legislation with a 2-year limit on and no application renewals without a waiver, et cetera. Mm-hmm. The lowest standard in the law for the passing of any laws is called a rational basis test. What would the legislatures, I'm inviting you to guess, you know, with your best insight, what would the legislature's wisdom have been in 2003? What would its rational basis have been for saying, we're only going to allow this thing for 2 years? Can you surmise what that might have been?
Through the chair, no, I don't know. I think, as suggested before, it may be because they thought that after some initial period that then there would be other measurable characteristics from that period of time that you could use that would be possibly as good or a better predictor, or at least... partially as good a predictor, but without having to go to using an insured's credit score, like, you know, the whether they regularly paid their premium or something other like that. But that I don't know.
Representative Ledoux.
So if income doesn't affect one's creditworthiness, so that if higher income people don't have better credit scores than lower income people. How come whenever I apply for a credit card, it wants to know what I make?
Through the chair, again, an insurance score is different from a FICO score, so I don't know to the extent that insurance that a FICO score may be correlated with income, but
I follow up. I don't know. You're using this term FICO score, and I don't actually know what that is.
Oh, sorry. So the FICO score maybe that's not the correct terminology to use, but that's the credit score that you get quoted. You know, if you want to see what my credit score is, so you go to Equifax or TransUnion or the third credit bureau. If you get a score, it's a number between, I think, 300 and 850 or something, and that's kind of the standard when someone says, well, what's your credit score? That's what I'm referring to, that score. And so those three credit bureaus have a way of calculating that, and I don't know exactly what that is. I don't know if anyone really does. It's kind of a black box. But for insurance score, each insurer actually files with the division. We see what credit characteristics they have in determining their proprietary score, and so they all use a different number of characteristics, different characteristics, and they weight them differently.
So do any of these insurance companies use income as one of their characteristics?
Through the chair, I don't believe they do. They may actually be prohibited from that. Yeah, I don't see that it's specifically prohibited, but I don't believe that any insurer uses income, and I don't think that we would. I don't think that we would allow that if they wanted to. I mean, we'd certainly have to scrutinize it, but. But no, I don't believe any insurance company uses income.
New question?
No, actually, it's kind of a follow-up on this. So I know that you're telling us we can't find out what each insurance company uses individually, that's proprietary information. Can we find out what they're all using? I mean, can you tell us? I mean, there must be a general number of insurance companies. Can you tell us the indicia, not for any separate insurance company, but say that what are the various indicia that are actually used?
Through the chair, yeah. I mean, I don't know right now, but you're asking for what credit history-based rate characteristics insurers use.
Yes.
In
yes.
Yeah, it's something I could look into and get back to you.
I'd appreciate that if we could get that before this bill comes up again.
Representative Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering if we had in our statute that we couldn't allow credit history at all, would insurance be more expensive in Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I don't know that I could give an answer to that. From what I've heard from insurers, on a macro level, if we can't use credit, then yes, in aggregate, prices would be more, but I can't say for sure.
Okay, thank you. I have another quick one like
certainly.
That. I just want to understand. So someone, and we've having poor credit crosses all income levels. So someone comes in for their first application to get insurance. Their credit is checked. They don't get the greatest rates as the next person who comes in the door for their first time with good rates. So their rates are a little bit higher that first year. So the next year, are their rates going to be lower then because credit isn't being considered? So the person that has poor credit history
at renewal time, will he or she get a lowered rate as a result of that, while the person with a good credit history who received a better rate the first round, the second time theirs is going to go up, we heard, an average 30-35%. So, is that assumption correct? And then I have a quick little follow-up with that, if that assumption is correct.
Okay, through the chair, Representative Hughes, each company, you know, each insurer does it a little differently, but at the end of the day, more or less the benefits cost what they cost. So there is certainly some savings in being able to price people accurately, and that's kind of removed if you strip out the credit. But yes, for all those who see an increase, there are going to be some who see a decrease by stripping out their credit. Yes.
And so as follow-up, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that the way we have it now, our people with poor credit history are getting rewarded, our people with good history are getting dinged at the renewal. And so the last question for you then is, in a sense, by the people with good history at renewal time, their rates going up, are they then, they're subsidizing the people with poor history that at that initial time whose rates are going down? Is that what's happening?
Through the chair, can you repeat exactly what you're asking?
Okay. So you've got a good history person and a bad history person. The good history person gets a good rate the first time. The second time they get a higher rate. Mm-hmm. The bad history person gets a lower rate the first time, but then comes in the second time and they get a lower rate, and that stays low. So therefore, your people that are staying with the company that haven't signed the waiver, that increase in 35% average is subsidizing the poor history people. Is that a good assumption?
Through the chair, Representative Hughes, I would hate to call it a subsidy. I think it's that when we tell insurers that they can't use credit, that's a variable, that's a risk characteristic that they use that is predictive of future loss. When you say that you can't look at that, there's no alternative. They then don't have that ability to predict future losses with the precision that they did. So it's still they're doing the best that they can with what they have, so it's difficult to call it a subsidy. It's kind of like saying if you just had to charge everyone an average rate. I mean, if that's the law, maybe you could say. I mean, would you say that someone's subsidizing someone else? I don't know.
Thank you.
Any further questions for the division?
Trying to stay awake, Mr. Chair. Oh. It's kind of hot over here.
Representative Joseph.
Thank you. One thing that would help me, and I got some of this today, and I can look online and I can read more and more, is someone to advocate, whether they believe in it or not, the sort of the Hawaii-California legislative line, so I have a sense of what it is. Because there are moments when I look at this and I say, it seems reasonable. What's the public outcry about? And I sort of get the public outcry. Of course, there's two public outcries. I could use the other perspective. And I'm happy to go find it.
Well, my plan is, I know there's still some people on the committee that have some concerns. I'd like you to put them in writing. Send them to Conrad by 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, and we will get the questions or the concerns out to the sponsor. You should be able to do it faster than that. 5 p.m. tomorrow, we'll get them out to Commissioner Wang Heyer, and we'll get them out to the sponsor's office, and we will see that at the next meeting if most of them can be addressed. Representative Ledoux.
Are there any figures by house district about credit scores?
Or community, maybe.
Well, community doesn't necessarily do it. That's, I mean, I'd like some sort of assurance that the folks that are in my district aren't going to be negatively impacted by this.
I think I can help you with that one. I think redlining is illegal in Alaska and has been for a number of years, where you do it by either zip code or house district or whatever you have. Where for a number of years they targeted low income.
So you're telling me there is not.
To the best of my knowledge, it's been illegal in Alaska for years. I see a lot of heads nodding yes. So, it was a problem a number of years ago, but it has not been a factor in Alaska, to the best of my knowledge. We can confirm that with the commissioner. That'll be my question. One of my questions, but 5 p.m. tomorrow, does that work?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Are you in wrap-up on testimony at this point?
We've got one more.
Okay, I'll wait. Just before you adjourn, I want to make a comment, but it's not necessarily a question, but
certainly.
I want to keep you rolling.
Thanks again, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Mike Snyder, are you with us still?
Hello.
Hello. Sorry you had to wait so long. Please state your name and affiliation. For the record, and you've got our undivided attention.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Schneider. I've been a practicing attorney in Anchorage since 1975. I deal with the insurance industry daily and have for most of those years. I'm not an actuary, but my concerns about this bill, and I'm speaking for myself, by the way, my concerns about this bill are that the insurance industry does a remarkably good job of making money and keeping it. And if you kind of listen to the numbers that you've been given today, it sounds as if by adopting this legislation, many, many, many people will save a lot of money. And that's the end of the story. The insurance industry doesn't rally its forces to get legislatures to adopt laws so it can lose money. And that's the message I would suggest that has been broadcast today. I just can't believe it's true. I suspect what will happen here, and it's something nobody else has raised, but I deal with a lot of folks that are dead or really hurt behind automobile misbehavior. And Alaska has many, many uninsured people. And I can't help but predict that if this legislation passes, you know, I'm probably going to get a break in my insurance rates, and maybe many people in the room with you will too. The trouble is there's a lot of folks that can barely afford the mandatory auto insurance that they have. And if those folks that can barely afford that insurance get a big rate increase, because along with barely being able to afford their insurance, they're barely able to afford anything else, and thus they have a bad credit score. I suspect we're going to have a lot more uninsured drivers. Every one of your constituents is at risk to a serious injury from an uninsured or underinsured person, and those are my concerns, and I would endorse the idea of going to Hawaii and California and seeing why those states that generally do a pretty good job of protecting their consumers have not elected to travel the industry trail. Thank you very much for listening to my remarks, and if anyone has any questions with me, I'd like to be happy to try to answer.
Mike, I see at least one question. Representative Ledoux.
Hi, Mike. This is Gabrielle, and I was just sort of a comment. I don't think this legislature with this budget situation is going to Hawaii, California, or any place else to do this kind of research.
No, perhaps we have to look at the insurance industry as a model on at least spending money. But thanks again, Mike. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify? Is there anybody else online? With that, I'm going to close out public testimony. bring it back to the committee for discussion and then hold the bill and over till next week. Representative Colbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just sitting here listening to the testimony. It's not on point whether or not how credit scores impact consumer pricing, but it's about the burden of paperwork that we face as the insured. Right now on my phone, I've got a, I think it's a workers' comp audit that I have to turn in. Oh, it's officer's payroll, what percentage of ownership, what are your payrolls in each discipline, how much overtime. We're used to doing paperwork for our insurance renewals. So we're being asked to, so they don't have to do paperwork when a company's, just hypothetical here, they don't want to do it, or it's costly. But when I have to renew my workers' comp, I have to do it or I won't be insured. I'll be canceled. When I have my general liability policy up, I have to go to the bookkeeper. I have to get gross revenues. And in each discipline, every year I have to fill that out by the deadline to renew or I won't get my policy renewed. Errors and omissions, I carry that too. And the same thing applies. And when, depending on when those deadlines fall on renewal, can be problematic. Can be right in the middle of the summer, and you know, the, all the certificates expire, and so then I have to renew the cert. My point is there's heaps of paperwork when you have insurance, and so it's hard for me to make a judgment call on whether this is good legislation or not, based on, well, we don't have the time to do the paperwork. Well, then relieve me from doing all this other paperwork I have to do because I don't have the time to do the paperwork either. So I need to hear an argument on the merits of why it's good and how we can make it easier for the consumer to respond, maybe online, some other way. Because to be insured adequately requires a lot of paperwork, and you have a lot of deadlines to meet. We get renewal notices for all of our policies. Your policy will be renewed. Have there been any changes? This is what your premium will be and your due date. On that form, we could simply have, would you like to have your policy reviewed on credit score with the opportunity to maybe increase or decrease it? Could be a box they check, send back. There's a way, there's a vehicle out there every time we get a renewal notice. So we're doing heaps of paperwork already. And that's just my thought. And you're in the business, you know.
Yeah, I've been out of the business for years by choice, believe me. Paperwork was...
Yeah, the paperwork is, I mean, an independent agent with all those policies, and I've had deadlines missed.
Gary Stranigan, are you still online? Gary? Nope, left. Gabrielle, Representative Ledoux.
So I guess I just wanted to comment that while the testimony so far has been that this is consumer-oriented legislation, I haven't heard in the public testimony any consumers actually asking us to do this.
I don't have an answer to that, and I think certainly a number of the people in the room would agree where I have not been a staunch fan of credit scoring over the years, but I've come around. I still can't tell you why it works. I don't think anybody in the room can. It's a black box. It works. But nobody will tell you, and part of it's proprietary, and I don't know what the other reasons are. But I think what we heard off the testimony is that there are two states that don't allow credit scoring, and there's one state, Alaska, that has adopted something, I think, in 2004, 2003, 2004, that allows what is at the root of the problem, which is the... I believe the first renewal after the initial use of credit scoring. Can somebody clean that up for me? Christy, would you come up again? Is that the gist of the issue?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the gist of it is...
Could you read yourself on the record?
Certainly. Christy Babcock with State Farm. I'm in Kenai. And the whole idea behind insurance is you're trying to always offer the right price for the risk. And so there's been several questions asked about what monies are made, what prices would do. I'd like to address that just really briefly. Insurance companies are going to charge overall what's needed to pay claims, hire people, and all of that. What they're really trying to do by using credit, and why it was inserted 20 years ago, is to try to segment the rate as much as possible. And it's been shown to be one of the most accurate indicators of the risk somebody presents, along with many other things. And so what companies want to do is try to be the best at predicting what risk these characteristics present to the company, and then giving that rate for it. And what the current law does is it says you can't use those characteristics. So your question was more along the lines of exactly what, and I'll be happy to answer it.
But
the question was related more to, tell me what the question was. I think I might have answered that. I'm not sure.
The problem appears to be the first renewal after the initial use of credit.
That's correct. Because there's a law that it's an, I would call it an anomaly in state statute. There's 700,000 people in Alaska. What are there, 300,000 or 400,000 drivers? All of these characteristics are allowed and are accurate indicators of giving the best rate for that person. Why, as a state, would we say certain characteristics have to be stripped out of renewal? Why would we want them to have to jump through hoops to get the rate? No matter their income, the people that I deal with all the time, these are not wealthy people. They are frustrated that they have to go through all of this for a product that they want, that they actually have to have, and it is at the first renewal that state law says it has to be stripped out.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, if they're frustrated and you're frustrated and they haven't gotten into any accidents and they've been paying their premiums on time, why don't you just give them the lowest rate?
It would be nice to give everybody insurance for free.
I'm not asking you to give it for free. I'm saying that if you have a customer who has been paying his bills on time and hasn't gotten into any accidents, why wouldn't you give that person? I mean, somehow or other you existed before this 2003 law went into place.
Credit has been used for 15 or 20 years in Alaska. And again, what every business does is try to price their product right. And nationally, credit is one of the characteristics that helps us price our product right and to give consumers the rate they deserve, because they're going to shop around to everybody else to get the best rate they deserve.
Paula?
So if somebody's been driving for 20 years and they've been paying their premiums on time for that 20 years, been paying their premiums on time to you guys at least for 20 years, what difference does it make that, you know, their mortgage is in foreclosure?
And I don't know the reasons why credit is such an accurate indicator of the risk that a customer presents. It's the highest indicator of the risk that customer presents. So it's one of many indicators that are used in establishing a rate.
Representative Colbert.
Yeah, follow up. Mr. Chairman, we're going to need actuarial expertise, something that where they break it down. The black box is not good enough. I mean, why is credit such an important risk-determining factor? And then if we haven't done it forever, 15, 20 years, that's not a real long history. What are the actuarial factors that they're looking at, and how does that relate with their driving record and the risk that that driver poses? I mean, that's the question we need answered by.
Put that down on your list.
That'd be, well, she's not an actuarial expert, Lori, but okay.
She has actuaries working for her, a number of them. And she is coming back from the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. She's in transit. She may have new information on California and Hawaii, for that matter. And I'm assuming that's on somebody's list. And with that, thanks again. Let's see, Keto.
I just wanted to make a comment, not really a question, and I do think some of the things that we're discussing about actuarials, it's one of those things that I find extremely fascinating. But really, when we're looking at identifying risk, my understanding is an actuarial correlation is just that, it's a correlation. The correlation doesn't imply a direct relationship between an activity and the result. It just implies that this seems to match up with this, and so you're not going to find a causal relationship. What you will find is that for some reason this factor over here matches up with this factor here, and the actuaries use that to try and lower the risk and make sure that everybody is paying the appropriate premium. So you're not going to find a causal relationship through actuarials, but you will find correlations, which are a bit different.
Representative Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Ms. Babcock, do you know whether or not the score is derived from some institution in the lower 48 at a national office or some contracted institution versus in your home office? I mean, you must know that, I assume.
It is not through the chair, Representative Josephson. I should probably defer to somebody that knows that answer better. Okay. We don't have our own credit bureau, if that's what you're asking. We use vendors that help provide that information.
May I follow? Through the chair, Ms. Babcock, are they in-state vendors? Do you know if they're in-state vendors? I guess what I'm trying to figure out is this a directive from National's home office for State Farm? And if it is, that doesn't necessarily lead me one direction or the other. Mm-hmm. I'm just, in fact, it may make me more sympathetic for your position. I don't know.
Well,
I'm just trying to figure out who's dictating this.
So almost every insurance company that is allowed under state statute, does use credit as one of the many characteristics. And with modeling and with the amount of data that is accessible and understandable and manageable since the technological age, we've been able to better match price to risk. Rates are developed for State Farm in Bloomington, Illinois. Alaska, like almost every other state, they all do it a little bit differently, but every rate change, every discount, every iteration of rates has to be approved before it is used. We file, and it might be a year before it's approved. It might be 6 months. It might be 2 years. So, and when we file for rates, they have to convince the Division of Insurance that those make sense. There has to be support. If we're going to give a discount for, say, having a second policy, we have to show that for some reason they represent a different risk to us. So every discount, every rate has to be approved. So there is a check and balance in place. Those rates are initially developed by corporate. Yes.
Representative Hughes.
Because you're here, and I'm not, since this is getting held over, I'm not sure if you're going to be here. From what I'm hearing, the use of a credit score allows for a more appropriate and fair price rate. So if we don't use a credit score, then we are getting less fair and less appropriate rate. And what I was asking the gentleman from the Division of Insurance as far as the first purchase as opposed to the second with someone with poor history compared to good credit history, and he didn't like the word subsidy, but really we're trying to even things out, and so the rate increases for those who would have good credit history, if it were to be checked, they are actually is it correct that they're helping in that pool cover what I believe might be a lower rate for the people that initially walked in the door with not so great history? Is that correct?
Representative Hughes, through the chair, yes. The answer is yes to the question you've asked now, to the question you asked earlier.
Yes. So in follow-up, we are, the way we have it now, the way I see it is we are, in a sense, at the two-year renewal, we are punishing the people with good credit history, and we're rewarding people that maybe don't have good history, and that's a problem.
Seeing no further questions, again, get your questions, concerns, comments in by 5 so we can transmit them to both Lauren and the Division of Insurance.
Black box. What's in the black box, Mr. Chairman?
I guarantee you, I'm the one person in the room that doesn't know, or maybe more than one. With that, we'll adjourn at 5 minutes to 5.